which is kind of what he called his projects after that album, Flat-Chested Girl from Maynardville. Now, over his career, Bobby Bear Jr. has recorded, I think it's 6 full-length studio albums. He also had that EP I mentioned about, Okay, I'm Sorry, that the cover song came off of. He has some live stuff on that and some other recordings on that EP. A couple singles, but since 2016, he's actually been playing guitar in Guided by Voices. That's right, along with Doug Gillard. Bob Pollard tapped him to join Guided by Voices, and he has performed on all of their albums since that time. So Bobby Bear Jr. still out there having fun, making music. In fact, speaking of having fun, he's done quite a few covers on his albums over the years. Like, for example, he's covered The Smiths. He's covered The Pixies. And also, he's done a lot of covers of Shel Silverstein. Now, what's interesting about that is Shel Silverstein is actually his godfather. So if you think of Bobby Bear Jr.'s writing style and technique and his approach to music, it's very much like Uncle Shel's. In fact, for my last song, it's a song from 1974 that his dad did of a Shel Silverstein tune, but it's actually Bobby Bear Jr.'s recording debut.
So I'd like to introduce you to the next superstar. 20 years from now, he's going to be so ashamed of what he has done on this record that he's probably going to sue me. And he and all of his friends are going to be sitting around stone. He said, look what the old man made me do. Let's give a big round of applause to Bobby Bear Jr.
Daddy, what if the sun stopped shining? What would happen then?
If the sun stopped shining, you'd be so surprised. You'd stare at the heavens with wide open eyes. And the wind would carry your light to the skies. And the sun would start shining again. Stop blowing, then the land would be dry, and your boat wouldn't sail, son, your kite couldn't fly, and the grass would see you troubling. She'd tell the wind, and the wind would start blowing again. If the grass stopped growing, you'd probably cry, and the ground would be watered by the tears from your eyes, and like your love for me, that grass would grow so high, this grass would start growing again.
But Daddy, what if I stopped loving you? What would happen then?
If you stopped loving me, then the grass would stop growing, the sun would stop shining, and the wind would stop blowing. So you see, if you want to keep this old world going, you better start loving me again, again. Better start loving me again. You hear me, Bob? You better start loving me.
What if the second deadliest cancer in men and women could be prevented? Would you try to avoid the pain? And what if you could protect yourself without leaving your home? Colorectal cancer is highly preventable. Screening is important, safe, and most people have options. Ask your doctor which screening test is right for you. Learn more from the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at GetScreened.org.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Let's get to, as we often do on Fridays, some stories that I just sort of ran out of time for during the week. I want to talk about Republican Senator Cynthia Lummis, who represents Wyoming. Senator Cynthia Lummis spoke the other day at the commencement of University of Wyoming. She gave the graduation speech. And during the graduation speech, for some reason, I don't know why, she went in a transphobic direction, injecting into the speech almost like you would bleach for COVID, which is a bad idea. And this was also a bad idea. That people aren't telling the fundamental truth that there are only two sexes, that anything can be challenged. And in fact, what she said was quite postmodern, in the sense that she made the claim that now there's no empirical realities. You can just sort of challenge anything, which is a postmodern idea at its core. So let's look at the clip and then we'll discuss. Now, she criticized that. I want to be clear. She didn't make the postmodern argument. She made the argument that sex has become almost postmodern and that any opinion about what sex is equally valid and whatever. OK, let's listen.
You woke up this morning with more individual freedom in the most creative, divinely inspired nation on earth.
Oh, and one of the things is that the video is sort of like sped up. So I'm going to turn it down so it's at like normal speed.
The transformations and disruptions I have alluded to are testing those very freedoms. Beyond watch, there are those in government who believe not that the Creator endowed us with inalienable rights, as the founders of our nation acknowledged in the Declaration of Independence.
First of all, suggesting that it sort of should be like the official thing in the United States, that everything we have, all the rights we have came from God, which, remember, they love to do this. They love to say the creators, the framers of the Constitution, the founding fathers, they believed that rights came from God or in religion or whatever the case may be. Sure, they were deists, but they believed it shouldn't have a role in civil government. They'll skip that part, but let's continue.
That government created those rights, and the government should redefine those rights, including our rights to freedom of speech, religion, property, assembly, and to keep and bear arms. Even fundamental scientific truths, such as the existence of two sexes, male and female, are subject to challenge these days.
And they boo.
You know,
it's not normal for commencement speakers to be booed.
And I challenge those of you, I'm not making a comment on the fact that there are people who transition between sexes.
So just stepping into it further and further. So there's a couple of different things here. First of all, as usual, sex and gender, Lummis is quite confused. At the same time, it is a scientific truth that some people are born intersex. So even though, of course, she's confused between sex and gender, she also states wrongly that it's a fundamental scientific truth that there's male and female. But in fact, I know it's a small percentage of people, but if you want to bring up science, you kind of have to acknowledge that she's also wrong on that. But that's not even really the issue. These commencement speeches, the whole idea is you bring a speaker who ideally is going to be inspiring to the people in the audience. It is going to sort of set off. You're going to kind of wind them up and send them off with energy and hope and ambition to do things to improve the world. And instead, she took the speech as an opportunity to do transphobic stuff, to do religious stuff, as religion should be part of government. Talked about guns. You saw her talk about the Second Amendment. This is just the complete wrong place for it. And unfortunately, the initial response from the school president was pretty mealy-mouthed. Ed Seidel is the president of UW. And initially put out a statement saying, on Saturday, the university celebrated spring commencement with a series of events that showcased blah, blah, blah. One of our speakers made remarks regarding biological sex that many on campus take issue with. While we respect the right of all to express their views, from students to elected officials, we unequivocally state that UW is an institution that supports and celebrates its diverse communities that collectively make us the wonderful place that we are. We welcome the incredible individuality and intellect of all of our dynamic and diverse students and never want you to feel otherwise. So not really a criticism of the actual speaker. And then that statement, after being decried as not very good, another statement was put out the following day from the university, which was a little more clear. And it said, unfortunately, during one of the ceremonies, there was reason for pause amid the celebration. And they name her. They say Wyoming Senator Cynthia Lummis offered the following statement. They quote the statement about two sexes. Our faculty, staff, and students know that is not the scientific truth. We affirm that humans may comprise various chromosomal variations. Not every person is strictly born female or male. Intersex members of our community who have diverse chromosomal makeup should be seen and recognized. Now, that's also kind of a cop-out, only in the sense that the reason the Lummis statement confuses sex and gender anyway, because she's confused. And they take the same approach I initially took, which is to say, even assuming she meant sex, she's wrong. Really, the issue here is a broader issue about gender and transgender, but it doesn't matter. It was good to see that after being shamed, University of Wyoming put out. And listen, you don't always want to attack the speakers that you invite. I get it. But they said it. And I'm glad to see it. But just what a dumb speech. I don't know any other way to say it. Hey, if you know me, you know I love a good conspiracy theory. I just really do. And one that is really funny is about reptilians. Now, maybe you don't know what reptilian is. That like a reptile? Well, it's like a reptile human sort of blend, like a reptile like humanoid. This comes from a number of different places, but where we most recently saw it, this is crazy. Eric Balling is now a Newsmax host. Newsmax is a crazier version of Fox News. Eric Balling actually used to be on Fox News. Now, he wasn't like a serious reporter. I'm not going to say that, but he was on Fox News. He was ultimately pushed out of Fox News because of sexual harassment allegations against him. On Newsmax, he seriously devoted a segment to maybe former President Barack Obama was a reptilian. Check this out.
Back in 2013, look at that. You see that? Obama visited the Middle East and gave a speech, an ordinary speech, but allegedly a reptilian was identified in the crowd, a Secret Service agent with very unique features. Either way, people ran with it. And if you can believe this, they even created a list on how to identify lizard people. Interesting, Obama did have low blood pressure. He doesn't wear glasses. He does love science. That's right. Remember when he invited that clock kid to the White House? An aspiring little scientist who made a clock, built it into a suitcase, wires hanging out all over with a countdown, all very alarming, don't you think? And he submitted the project to school. Well, the worst thing could have happened. The suitcase started beeping. People thought it was a bomb. The teacher called the cops. Parents were upset. It was all a whole ordeal. But I bet if Clock Kid brought that to the White House unannounced, it would ruffle some feathers now.
Okay, so Eric Balling barely able to read off of the teleprompter. Some people are saying that he's not taking the conspiracy theory seriously. Others are saying he clearly is. It kind of doesn't matter. The fact that they're even explaining, talking about these claims in this way is absolutely bizarre. So for those who don't know, I really do love this stuff. Reptilian conspiracy theories, they're sometimes they call them reptoids, reptiloids, or lizard people. These are supposed reptilian humanoids. And the idea of reptilians goes back to David Icke. David Icke is a conspiracy theorist who has claimed that shape-shifting reptilian aliens control Earth because they take on a human form, so they pass as humans. And then they use their intelligence combined with their fake human form to gain political power. And then they manipulate human societies. And Icke has previously stated that there are lots of world leaders either who are reptilian or are possessed by or controlled by reptilians. And there are adherents of the QAnon conspiracy theory who borrow a lot of stuff from reptilians. You know, with all of these things, this is a particularly funny one to me. Now, I know that you can say this one is damaging in the sense that the people that believe it often are also anti-Semitic. They talk about, globalists, globalish. Yeah. And all of this stuff. But by itself, it's just kind of dumb. And of course, we have to at some point apply an Occam's razor to it. This just seems really complicated. And if they could take on this human form, why would they do it in a way that they would be identifiable? Like that infamous video, it's like a weird grainy angle of some Secret Service agent that he was talking about. That's really old. They've brought that up before. Why would they take such a reptilian form? If they have such advanced technology and they're so smart, why couldn't they just design it so that they look past like humans? I mean, none of it makes sense. But the fact that Newsmax is putting this stuff up as if it's really a topic of discussion shows us how far we've fallen. It's even beyond Fox News, I think, although maybe not. I'd have to go back and review some of the Fox News segments. Eric Balling, from Fox News host to sexual harassment claims to getting fired, although officially they parted ways amicably, to spreading ideas about reptilians on Newsmax. My, how the mighty have fallen. Remember that on Monday, Memorial Day, we will have a one-day membership special. We can offer you this special only on a holiday because our entire team will be on break, so they won't know that we're kind of giving away the farm with such a big discount. I would love for you to sign up for a membership at joinpacman.com, but if you want the biggest discount, just get on my newsletter at davidpacman.com. Monday, Memorial Day, you'll get an email telling you exactly how to sign up. The David Pakman Show is, of course, a community and audience-supported program. You can sign up at joinpakman.com and get instant access not only to the bonus show.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
But also to the daily commercial-free audio stream, daily commercial-free video stream. And you get all of it 6 hours before everybody else. Sign up at joinpakman.com. Let's speak to people in the audience. We take calls via Discord. You can go to davidpakman.com/discord. It's all free. I have nothing to sell you in this particular case other than a good time. Let's start today with Ricky from Charlotte. Ricky, are you reveling in the loss of Madison Cawthorn in your state?
You know, I'm actually a little bit upset.
Really?
I never liked him, but seeing like these videos come out that kind of normalized him a little bit. I mean, you know, seeing like him in like a more candid sort of position and seeing that that's what took him down, I really don't like that.
Is that what you feel? Is that the discussion in North Carolina, that it's the personal stuff that took him down?
Yes, without a doubt.
Okay.
You know, the people are like big, you know, decorum ninjas and stuff like that here.
Fair. Fair.
That definitely took him down. Anyways, but David, you know, I wanted to ask you this, and I want you to answer this as honest and candidly as possible.
Okay.
I recently kind of had an epiphany looking at kind of looking at how bad things are right now and how bleak the future looks. And this is about everything. You know, it seems to me like a lot of momentum is with the right now, how strong and united they are. The Republican Party is increasingly going into an authoritarian fascist direction.
Yes.
On top of that, the problems that we have with this war, which I really don't like how it seems to be escalating, and the fact that we're still not addressing big issues like climate change. All of this, like, really does make me feel kind of like what Chomsky was saying recently about how we're getting, like, the doomsday clock is ticking. So assuming you, like, agree with a lot of those sentiments, is there anything in spite of all this that gives you any optimism or hope with all of this going on?
I mean, it's sort of cliche at this point, but it's that if you zoom out a little, it does seem that things are generally getting better. And I know that a lot of people, it's very unpopular now. You know, this is like the Steven Pinsker thing. Wait, is that his name? The whole thing of how over time, you know, death from wars has gone down and infant mortality has gone down and all of that stuff. It doesn't ignore that there's many problems that we could have already fixed, like hunger, for example. But I maintain just like a general cautious optimism, particularly with the idea that young people are actually motivated to find solutions to a lot of these problems. And so I maintain a long term optimism. But I do think the next 8 to 10 years could be pretty bad.
Yeah, my the bar has gotten so low for me. Like, I honestly, like, I don't care about who wins the next couple of elections. I mainly just want, one, the U.S. to still be a democracy in 10 years.
Right.
And that we haven't, the whole world hasn't been destroyed in a nuclear war, and that there can still be something saved from the planet, that it will still be inhabitable. There's still something we can do to make it still inhabitable for like the next 100 years. That's just the main things that I want to see happen at this
point. I'm right with you, Ricky. I'm right with you there.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. There's Ricky from Charlotte. Let's go next to, I don't know. Why don't we go to Chris from Texas? Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, David, again. Nice to talk to you again.
Pleasure.
All right. So I guess one thing I'm just kind of a little scared about is, like, there's been just an increase in white supremacist violence and rhetoric throughout this whole country. Like, we saw it in 2018 with the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting. Then we saw it again in 2019 with the El Paso shooting and the Poway synagogue shooting. And now just recently with this Buffalo shooting.
Yes.
I just feel like we have to do something about it. I feel like we have to take more measures, like, against, like, the news media that's responsible for, like, such as Fox News about these things.
When you say we have to take action, what would you do to Fox News?
I feel like we need to, I mean, one thing I'm thinking about doing is we would probably need to maybe try to pressure their sponsors to probably cut off ties to people such as Tucker Carlson, because I feel like as long as Tucker Carlson still gets money from Fox News and he brings in a lot of the money, since he's like the highest rating person there, there's not going to be much incentive for Fox News to change.
Well, what you have to remember, we actually talked about this earlier this week, Fox is different than some of the other networks in that Fox gets 2/3 of its revenue from subscription fees from cable companies and not so much from advertising. So actually going after Fox's advertisers doesn't have as big of an effect as it would on some other companies, other channels, which is an unfortunate thing. So really what people have to do is you have to call your cable company and say, I don't want Fox News. Make Fox an optional channel. And if I don't want it, I save my $2 a month. That would actually crush Fox.
Kind of like what we did with OAN with the whole AT&T scandal that they had.
In a sense, but the difference is that Fox is included in just standard cable packages, and people don't even realize that close to $2 a month from what they pay is going to Fox, even if you don't watch it. That has to change.
I think you cut off.
Hello. All right. Thank you very much for the call. Sounds like we're having a bit of a connection issue. But yeah, that's the issue with going after Fox's advertisers. They're not nearly as reliant on advertisers as many of the other platforms. Let's go next to Johnny from Boston. Johnny, welcome.
Hey, David. I have a question in regards to the trans women in bathroom legislations I've been going around. And
sure.
Quite frankly, I don't feel like they really are honest with the language, because I feel like they're playing on the prejudices of voters and of just maybe ignorances of what trans people are. Do you think that's done willingly, or do you think that there are people who really don't understand what like trans issues and trans rights are?
Well, give me, what do you mean? What's the language that's in the bills that you think doesn't consider the reality of trans folks?
So they talk more about like, though we're going to have trans women in bathrooms, and then it's like, you're going to only have the people in the bathroom of their biological sex assigned at birth. However, they're not thinking of the reality is that, yeah, that means trans men who look and present as men are going to end up in women's bathrooms.
Yep.
If they go like they don't feel like they're thinking this out.
You're absolutely right. And so what you're pointing out is that if you just make a rule that basically says you've got to go in the bathroom that matches your biological sex at birth, there are plenty of trans women now who I'm trying to use, you know, careful but respectful language. To the average person, you see these individuals and you go, that's a woman. You would have no particular reason to say that's not actually a woman as I see it. If they are forced to go to the men's room, it's going to be just as confusing of a situation. You can also take the opposite and talk about trans men as well. So you're completely correct. And the issue is they don't really care about that. They just care about having what they see as the morally and politically correct rule that goes along with their pre-existing worldview. They don't care about the practicality or reality of it.
Yeah, and I am frustrated with people who are GOPs who say that they're trans allies.
Yep.
And don't speak up on it. Like that's hot garbage.
Yeah.
They should do that. Like I see people like Meghan McCain not say a damn thing about it, but
oh, is
claim
that right?
to be. Yeah, and she claims to be like an LGBT ally. I go, you know, T means trans. So
right.
Use your platform.
A lot of people, you know, for a lot of people, being an LGBT ally means they have one lesbian friend, you know?
Right. Or they want to watch Drag Race. Like, that's literally
right. Very well said, Johnny. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. That was it.
There's Johnny in Boston. Great to hear from you, as always. Let's go next to, I don't know. There's a lot of interesting folks waiting today. Why don't we go to Ruminate in Kentucky? Is Ruminate your first or last name?
It is just my stage name.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. David, man, I appreciate you taking the call. And can you hear me well?
I can hear you beautifully.
Perfect. So I'm a big fan of the show. I was introduced to you during the pandemic.
Okay.
And you and like Brian Tyler Cohen and a bunch of others, you helped get me through it. So I appreciate, you know, all that you do. I do have a specific question about rhetoric, moderating rhetoric. So, you know, friends of yours like Destiny, who I'm also a fan of, and even your new correspondent, Luke Beasley, who mm-hmm. did a great job in Texas.
He did.
They are fans of, or they seem to be proponents of moderating rhetoric, that leftists, even progressive leftists, in terms of their public outreach, should moderate their rhetoric. Even though the GOP seems to be increasingly radical, increasingly aggressive, and there's like this dispute in the leftist community. Should we be more aggressive? Should we try to appeal more across the aisle? And I'm curious what you think about it.
Well, let me ask, why do you say that our correspondent Luke seems to favor moderating rhetoric? What gave you that impression?
He did a discussion with Vosh or Vaush. Yesterday. It was a really good conversation.
Oh, Luke Beasley did.
Yep.
How did they get in touch? That's fascinating. I didn't know they talked to each other.
I mean, your name carries weight, man. He's a DPAC correspondent. That's political royalty.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch that. Okay. And so he said he was a fan of moderating rhetoric.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm sure you're familiar enough with Vosh to know that, you know, which I'm a fan of his as well, but he definitely takes a more aggressive route with respect to rhetoric. He thinks that the Republican Party as an institution, its leadership is evil. They're morally wicked. And so he feels that there should be a greater condemnation of the GOP by leftists, by Democrats, by progressive, by just bog standard liberals.
Yep.
And Luke's position was broadly like, hey, man, I think that that's going to scare people away. And I see both sides of it, but I also feel
this
like
is the
we
Luke
have
Beast.
Erred more closely on the side of moderate rhetoric. Biden is a moderate person, and yet it doesn't seem to be doing him any favors with independents and centrists and whatnot. So that's why I wanted your take on, I mean, you in your videos, you are very candid that the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, though flawed, are not comparable. The Republicans are infinitely worse as a institution.
Yeah.
Do you think that leftists should be more emphatic about that? Like, no, this notion of a bipartisan, you know, future, and that we need a strong Republican Party, like Speaker Pelosi says, that's just crap, and we got to get more radical in our rhetoric.
So here's my view. I don't think that it should be one thing or the other for contrived reasons of optics or strategy. I think that we should just be really clear about calling things as I see them. So I can't speak for anybody else's perspective. My perspective is I'm not going to artificially use milder or more extreme rhetoric just for the reason of how it will look. I'm going to describe things in the way that I think they are, and with the language that I think is most appropriate. And when I'm talking about radical, repugnant, lunatic Trumpists, that's what I'll call them. I won't say anything that's moderate, more moderate or more extreme than what I see them as being. I'm open to other people saying, no, the strategy should be to use either more moderate or radical rhetoric for this reason or for that reason. My approach, and people can tell me it doesn't work or it's wrong, is I just call things and describe things as they are with the language that feels accurate.
Right. Fair enough. And then one last thing I just want to say, I think that you're probably your standout quality on your show is you are a superb interviewer. So I was going back and watching your interviews with Tim Pool and Michael Knowles and Sam Harris and that recent one, Trigonometry.
Yep.
I guess my last question is, do right wingers or more centrist figures, like, because Sam Harris isn't a right winger, but he is certainly more centrist, I think, than many others. Do they avoid interviews with you, or like, do you reach out to people often to have those sorts of incisive Q's and A's, and do they take you up on the offer?
It's a mix. We reach out to tons of people all the time, and there's no rule, you know. Sam Harris has previously accepted requests from us, but for a year and a half, I've been trying to get him back on, and he has not accepted. So I there's no hard and fast rule, but I'm obviously open to talking to all sorts of people.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, David. Thanks, and keep doing what you're doing, man.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the call. I'm going to have to check out that Vaush and Luke Beasley appearance. That sounds pretty interesting. Let's see where we want to go next. Oh, I don't know. What about maybe Dave from Kansas City? Dave, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Alrighty then. First time caller. I'm going to be as brief as I can. It is kind of a loaded question. Mm-hmm. Basically my politics lean the same as you. So there's no, head to head here, if you will. But I've not been keeping the best update on the situation. This is regarding the Supreme Court leak.
Okay.
Basically, you said something recently that kind of made me raise an eyebrow, and I've seen other people do it as well. So here we go. Initially, it was stated by those on the right that the left-wing person did it to try to pressure change from the leaked opinion.
Yep.
But later I heard that the rhetoric changed to be likely a person on the right putting pressure on the judges to keep their vote. The reason this raised an eyebrow for me was because, you know, if you assume the least amount of information out of all these using Occam's razor, these are the same amount of assumptions. What am I missing from the quote unquote likely nature?
That's a great question. So basically, in terms of plausibility, when it comes to the Supreme Court leak, you can argue if you know nothing and all you have is motive, you could say, well, a left winger would have motive to leak it to try to pressure the justices who were going to vote to overturn Roe v. Wade to change their mind. From motive, you could also say a right winger might have leaked it in order to try to pressure the justices planning to overturn Roe v. Wade to stick with that decision if they suspected maybe they were going to change. So that, you're absolutely right. We don't have more information one way or the other. We have gotten reports from longtime Supreme Court reporters, including one from NPR whose name I don't remember offhand, who said, based on everyone she's talked to, the consensus within the court is that it was more likely a right winger. So that's the only difference maker. You're correct that we have almost the same thing on both sides, other than a couple of reports from longtime Supreme Court reporters who say the feeling is it was more likely a right winger. We don't know at this point.
Okay. Yeah, it was just something that kind of, I didn't hear that last part. I think maybe now that I'm thinking about it, I just couldn't find it going through. I only have so much time to go through all the videos. Basically.
Yeah, we linked to the source in the story I did about it. We linked to the NPR source.
Okay, sounds good. I'll check that out.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. We are going to take more calls in a moment. I'm just going to take a very quick break and then we'll be right back. Just hold on and then we'll get to more people. Let's go back to Discord at davidpakman.com/discord and speak to some more people. We use what's called the waiting lobby when we take calls. Why don't we speak to, there's really a lot of people today who want to chat, but we want to try to get to some a wide representation. Let's go to Brenda from Minnesota. Brenda, you're on the air.
Hello, David. This is Brenda from Minnesota. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I called specifically because I don't know if you're familiar with him. Telltale, who is Owen, has several web YouTube channels called Telltale Atheist and stuff. And he published a video recently that gives specific instructions to women on how to get an abortion, specifically for women who happen to be in a state which may, you know, prevent them getting an abortion, specific instructions on exactly who to email and how to get abortion pills. And it is
Okay, hold on, Brenda, I've got to interrupt you. So this is a bit precarious only because I don't know who this person is. I don't know what their credentials are. I'm not up to speed on the legality of, quote, getting abortion pills and all of the different legal infrastructure. I just want to be really careful about what we put out here because I don't want to overstep or create a problem of any kind for anyone, including myself. So I don't know. I mean, listen, it's great that there are resources out there for people, but let's maybe ease up a little on the specifics here if we can.
Oh, okay. So it is legal because the
which
U.S.
part,
man
which
has-
part is legal?
It is legal to receive abortion pills through the mail. This was a very recent thing.
But now correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it that's legal in states where it is already legal to obtain them, right? I mean, that so based on the existing legal infrastructure, getting them through the mail is okay.
My understanding, it's legal everywhere in the United States.
Okay, see, that wasn't my understanding. So are you a lawyer by chance?
No, I'm a nobody.
I'm not either. So let's just be careful. But so you want people to look up Telltale, is that right?
I posted a link in the chat here. He has a video, and if you talk to him, you know, maybe your concerns would be addressed more. He would be a good guest, but also this information, I think it'd be good to amplify this information. It's if you hosted it. He has said that he will not, he does not copyright it or do any DM strikes. But maybe if you talk to him more, he can be more specific on the legalities.
Good. Okay, that sounds good. Thank you, Brenda.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. There's Brenda from Minnesota. We don't want to do anything wrong on the show. You know, that's the priority. We want to be very careful. Let's go next to. Let's go to Nick from Long Island. Nick, welcome.
Hey, David. So my question is, do you think that, so we had primaries last night. We had John Fetterman win the Pennsylvania primary. And it's looking like conservative Democrat Kurt Schrader is going to lose his primary to a more left-leaning candidate. I was wondering, because I've heard many on the left say that progressive candidates have a better chance of winning the general election. Do you agree with that, or do you think that more moderate candidates have better chances of winning?
There's no one answer for that. So, for example, in West Virginia, if a more progressive Democrat manages to successfully primary Joe Manchin, that progressive Democrat almost certainly loses the election in West Virginia, and we get a Republican senator. In a place like Pennsylvania, I think a more progressive Democrat is far more likely to do well in the general. So there's no one answer. What, in order to say who is likely to do better, you first have to answer the question, well, who's in the electorate? Are we talking about nationally? Are we talking about a particular congressional district or a state? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, doesn't it like depend on what policies are popular in the state we're talking about?
That's right. So to say, are progressives likely to do better? The question is, well, who are the voters and what do they want?
Yeah. So it's not like a black and white thing.
No, because, not at all. Not at all. Because, I mean, there are seats where a centrist Democrat is as left as would be able to win. There are other seats, like, for example, AOC's district. AOC replaced a longtime incumbent. She's well to his left because the electorate lined up with her views. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that's like a safe seat. That's a safe Democratic seat. I'm talking about like in mainly swing districts.
Well, it depends on the specifics of the district is what I'm saying.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, and I wanted to point that out because I heard from Dave Wasserman on Twitter saying that the Cook Political Report will change Oregon's 5th district to a toss-up race if Kurt Schrader loses his primary to a more... I forgot the person's name, but yeah.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Yeah, not one answer. It's a great question. It's a complicated question as well. Why don't we speak next to, let's go to, I hope I pronounced this correctly. Is it Saki Kazi from Pakistan?
Yeah, no. Sorry. That's not how I say my name, but it's all right.
All right. Well, welcome to the show.
Yeah, dude. I'm a big fan of your show. I've been watching your videos on YouTube, and they're really interesting and really pique my interest.
Thank you.
Sorry, I'm a little giddy here, I guess, or something.
You're doing great. What's your question? What's on your mind?
I was just thinking the I don't know if this is relevant right now or something, but I feel like if you had the chance to say I don't know if it may be controversial or not, but if you were to get, say, the former president on your show.
Yeah. You're talking about Trump? Oh, boy. Yeah, your connection's gone into the toilet. Sorry, I'm going to have to flush the connection 10 to 15 times. We're just losing you. It's just digital noises. I apologize. Let's go to Kyle from South Carolina. Kyle, welcome. Kyle from South Carolina, you're on the show. And last chance for Kyle from South Carolina. You've got to unmute.
Can you hear me?
Now I can.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
The reason why I was calling is because I've been recently researching on Represent Us. Have you heard anything about it?
Kyle, I'm sorry. Are you using speakerphone or something? You sound like you're underwater.
I'm using my earbud, a Raycon earbud. Did I change to a straight headphone then?
Okay, your question was about representation? Dear God. All right, we're going to have to move on. Everything going wrong. This was going so well for so long. Let's try Matthew from Jersey. Matthew, please save us.
Hello?
Oh, my God. You're not running a lathe in the background, are you?
Do you need any? Do you need me to do something then when it comes to the microphone?
Yes, please run a lathe. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead. What's going on? What's on your mind today?
Well, one thing, of course, that I've been thinking about is now, obviously, this has changed a little bit with last night's primaries, because a lot of left-wing people like won. There was Summer Lee, John Fetterman, Charles Booker. I think there was a few in Oregon. But what I was going to say before, thinking about beforehand, was you had, you know, similar to how you said, like, all the, you know, Trump's momentum that was so big, and it went, then it starts to go away. Thank goodness Cawthorn's gone. And so it made me think, you know, it's like so many of what made me think of Bernie, who I like a lot, but, you know, like his big number one spokesman, Nina Turner, the symbol of the left-wing movement. She ran for Congress the first time, almost won, close call, didn't. So she runs the second time, gets obliterated, and it makes me think, is the Bernie factor also losing its luster? And furthermore, since Bernie was never president, was it ever really there to begin with?
That's a fair question. I mean, I've said before, as a Bernie supporter, I recognize that the perception of Bernie's level of support was pretty significantly overstated if you spent a lot of time on Twitter and Reddit relative to the Democratic Party at large. I don't know that I would say that Bernie's losing his luster. I mean, I think Bernie's not been a major factor in the last year, I think is what I would say. Matthew, I have to ask, what is all that noise in the background?
I don't hear any noise.
It sounds like either a didgeridoo or a lawnmower. I'm going to answer the rest of the question offline, just so we don't subject our audience to the torture there. I think what's going on is that some of these races, Nina Turner, I think, is a good example. And I know people get really mad when I make this analysis. The electorate in that district, I forget what number district in Ohio, is just not as left as maybe it seemed from the national enthusiasm behind Nina Turner. It's not an insult. It's not an attack. It's just the recognition that the people that voted didn't really seem to be buying the Nina Turner ideology, what she was selling. And we just have to recognize it kind of goes back to the earlier question of, is a progressive more likely to win? Well, where? In what district? In what state? In when? And so I think that there's no one answer to that question, but it's less about Bernie's momentum or whatever. It's, you know, there are places where the voters, they maybe they're wrong, maybe they're ignorant, but they prefer something different than Bernie, Nina Turner. And we all have to just kind of recognize that and meet people where they are, at least initially. And then you see what changes you can make. Let's go to Matt, the social studies guy. Welcome, Matt. What's going on?
Hey, David. So I wanted to ask, are you familiar with Jamie Raskin had mentioned, this is a few weeks back now, he had mentioned that there's going to be public hearings of information uncovered starting next month, I believe it is. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, January 9th, the January 6th committee. I'm sorry, June 9th. The January 6th committee hearings start.
Okay. And I also want to know, I believe his quote he used was, you know, the things that are going to come to light, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but they're going to blow the roof off the house.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now my question is, you know, I think it's a great idea. And I would think you would agree, you know, we all kind of want to know what has been uncovered. We want to know, you know, the nuts and bolts of what happened.
Yeah.
And I know there's a good portion of us, probably all the left, I don't want to overstate, that also want to know what's going on. I also know that there's a contingent on the right who, right out of the gate, they're just going to say, you know, it's a partisan witch hunt, it's garbage, it's fake news, you know, what have you. They're not going to listen whatever is said.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, you know, do you think there's a portion of people on the fence who are going to be swayed by this? You know, how effective do you think it's going to be in actually kind of getting people to see you know, what really went on here.
I think that the effect of the January 6th hearings, if they are what Jamie Raskin says they're going to be, is going to be less about changing minds, but more about activating people. Because remember, we have very low voter turnout in this country, especially in midterms. So my optimistic hope would be, and there's no guarantee that this happens, if people who don't normally vote hear in those hearings about the terrible things that were done in trying to steal the election and the lead up to the Trump riots, that they will say, you know what, I don't normally vote, but this time I'm going to. So in my mind, it's more about activating people than it is about changing minds.
I see. Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call, Matt, the social studies guy. That's going to do it for calls today. We will take a quick break and be back with much more right after this. It is the world famous Friday mailbag. If you have anything you want to say to me, say it. You can email info@davidpakman.com. Don't abuse it. If you send emails regularly, you've probably been flagged and filtered right into the trash. Unfortunately, there are people who send us dozens of emails a day, even five a day. We just can't handle it. We have too many emails coming in. If you're abusing it, unfortunately, it's getting filtered, my friends. But let's get into some of the messages that we did get. Brian wrote in about an inaccuracy in a video. David, your recent video, Confidence in Trump-Filled Supreme Court Collapses, has an inaccuracy. Chief Justice Roberts took the bench on September 29, 2005. This was after the re-election of Bush, where he did win the popular vote against Kerry by approximately 3 million votes. The same can be said about Justice Alito, going on to say, who assumed the bench in 2006. While I understand what you're saying about the 2000 popular vote count, the claim you made is partially inaccurate and requires further context. Yeah, so my point was, had the first election gone by the popular vote, Bush never would have been president. And so, yes, this is true that there was another election which Bush did win, but Bush never would have been in the position of being reelected had it not been for the electoral rather than popular vote results in the year 2000. Next email is from Marco, suggestion for 1.5 million subscribers. Marco says, I know you're going to reach that milestone quite strongly. As an act of powerful celebration, I think you should shave your head when you reach that goal. Yeah, like I honestly would be willing to do that when we get to 1.5 million subscribers, but not just because we get there. Like we'll get there eventually. The question is there anything we can do to get there much more quickly? And I don't know that promising to shave my head is actually going to do it. One other idea that came in from Maurice was, David, on achieving 1.5 million subscribers, may I suggest you do a live colonoscopy on air? Now, what's funny about that is, in general, when we say doing a colonoscopy, we mean the doctor does it. The patient receives it. So I'm going to guess Maurice thinks I should receive a colonoscopy on air. But what he's actually saying is I should perform one. And my specialty is podiatry. I could not possibly do a colonoscopy. That would be outside of my area of expertise. But it's an interesting idea nonetheless. The audience must be very confident in me to suggest that. Ryan wrote in about 2000 mules and says, David, do you plan on watching or commenting on Dinesh D'Souza's 2000 mules? My right wing coworkers have been talking about it, and I'm looking forward to you dismantling the claims made in the film. Ryan has actually been leaving dozens of YouTube comments saying the same thing. Ryan's obsessed with the film. So I watched the first two thirds of the film. It's nonsense. There's really nothing to refute. The whole concept of the film is that using cell phone geolocation data, which is not that accurate, they pretend it's accurate and extrapolate from that there were people trafficking massive dumps of ballots illegally on election day in 2020. There's no actual evidence presented. It's worthless. Don't waste your time. It'll really rot your brain. So no, we are not going to be talking too much more about that. Next, my pronunciation of Bangor, Maine, Sabrina from Ellsworth, Maine, wrote in and said, there's no er, it's or. I pronounced it banger, and Sabrina says it's Bangor. I actually, you know, 99% of the time, my mispronunciations on this show are purposeful. You know, Dan Bongino, Tulsi Gabbard, etc. I actually didn't remember how to pronounce Bangor. I thought it might have been banger. I apologize to anyone who was offended. Thank you, Sabrina. Douglas wrote in and says, argument for prosecuting out-of-state abortions. Could states that want to prosecute its citizens for out-of-state abortions try to argue that it's the same as if California made murder legal and someone took their child to California, murdered the child, and then came back to their home state? Well, you could argue that, but generally speaking, states can only prosecute crimes committed in their jurisdiction. In their jurisdiction. So if murder were legal in California, generally speaking, if you take your kid to California and kill them where it's legal, and then you go back to wherever, Nebraska, where it's illegal, Nebraska can't prosecute you for a crime that happened outside of its jurisdiction. So it's an interesting question. It just doesn't work the way I think, Douglas, you may think it does. It's also kind of, it's a very depressing example, I should say. Catherine wrote in, is miscarriage manslaughter then? David, if fetuses have rights, then doesn't it follow that they have rights to due process? It would be incredibly evil, but any miscarriage ought to be investigated on the behalf of the miscarried fetus. Did would-be mama miss her vitamins? Did she travel against doctor's advice? Did would-be papa slam on the brakes while speeding, causing mama seatbelt trauma? Most miscarriages can in many cases be shown to be a parent legally at fault if the fetus has a right to life and due process in the case of death. Incredibly evil, but it's exactly what they're arguing for, isn't it? Catherine, in many cases, in many senses, it is. In many senses, it is. And listen, we played a clip on our Monday show from someone that Luke Beasley interviewed at the Trump event over the weekend, who said mothers who get an abortion should get the death penalty. They believe abortion is murder. The mother is the murderer. In Texas, they have the death penalty. So that's it. Murder, you know, put to death the mother. And unfortunately, these are exactly the types of things. I mean, listen, last week we played a clip about right wingers expecting to start to see the death penalty for abortion providers as well. So that's exactly what they're pointing to. And it's quite horrifying. Next email is from Christopher. Christopher says, you are unapologetically using the tools you decry. David, many of us are aware you're employing the slippery slope in your Roe coverage. And yet some 2 months ago, you exposed the slippery slope for what it is, a fallacy. Here's a link to that video for reference. What's up with that? Chris, the fallacy is wrongly talking about a slippery slope. In the same way that appeal to authority isn't a fallacy if we're actually dealing with an authority in the subject matter, the fact that the slippery slope fallacy exists doesn't make it fallacious when it's accurate. And within days of the leaked Roe v. Wade ruling, you had all sorts of anti-choice activists talking about, we've got to start prosecuting the moms and we've got to prosecute the abortion doctors. Greg Abbott in Texas saying we've got to reverse the Supreme Court decision that allows the children of undocumented immigrants to go to public school. They want to do away with that because, listen, if you can do away Roe v. Wade, you can do away with that. They're again talking about gay marriage and saying gay marriage was just as wrongly decided. We've now had a dozen examples. So the slippery slope is not a fallacy when it's happening, and it is already. A user named Truth and More Truth wrote on YouTube, I just don't get how someone like Alex Jones has any supporters. How? Who is this stupid? WWE actors are more believable. He admitted it's all an act in court. He could be wearing a shirt that says, I'm fake. I'm using you. You're stupid if you believe me. And people will still follow him. That's absolutely true. And we see that with a lot of the Trumpist type cult. Where it's, they could just lie. They could tell the truth, exposing that it's all a grift, and they would still have followers. And you know how they would rationalize it? They would go, Alex Jones had to say that in court. He's not really playing a character. He had to say it in court because otherwise they were going to get him. But he really believes the stuff he says. Now, I don't actually know. Alex Jones may well believe the things he said. I've gone back and forth over the years about which it is. Brian wrote in about me. This loser is still on YouTube. This channel is trash. David Pakman has an IQ of a tennis ball, but that would be an insult to the ball itself. Your channel sucks. David Pakman sucks. He doesn't cover anything realistic. This show is all BS all day, every day, just like David Pakman face is. And then I think that's the vomit emoji. Brian, remember, you don't have to watch this show. It's optional. It's optional. You don't have to be here. My recommendation continues to be, if you don't like the show, don't watch the show. I know it's a novel thing. And also, by the way, you don't have to comment about everything I say. Like, you don't have to email me because I said something you disagree with. You could just go, oh, yeah, I disagree with that. I'm going to get back to work or whatever the case may be. It's an option. It's an option. It is available to you. We have a great bonus show for you today. Sign up at joinpacman.com. Speaking of Alex Jones, Jones would tell you not to get the bonus show.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money. Everybody yeah. else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
He doesn't like it. But I do. And so I encourage you to sign up at joinpacman.com. Get the
use prescription opioid pain medicines can spell trouble. They can spell risk if taken by someone they weren't prescribed for. Harm if accidentally taken by a child or pet. Or overdose if they're not used as directed. Safely dispose of opioids before they can hurt your family. Find a drug take-back option such as medicine drop boxes. You may find these in your community, at local pharmacies or police stations. Visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
Hi, this is God. Whenever I'm in Pittsburgh, which is always because I'm omnipresent, I listen to every radio station at the same time, including WRCT.
You're not to worry, but maybe that's a lie. Honey, what's your hurry? Won't you stay inside? Remember not to get too close to stars. They're never gonna give you love like ours. Where did you go? I should know, but it's cold and I don't wanna be lonely. So show me the way home. I can lose another life.
Thank you.
WRCT, Pittsburgh.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
And I say to my fellow Australians, thank you for this extraordinary honour. Tonight, the Australian people have voted for change.
In what's being described as a green slide, voters in Australia topple the Prime Minister, ending nearly a decade of Conservative rule. The main issue? Climate. The new Green Labour Coalition Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese. We'll get an update from leading Australian climate scientist and activist Tim Flannery. Then this week marks the second anniversary of the police murder of George Floyd. We'll speak with the Washington Post reporters who co-authored the new book, His Name is George Floyd, One Man's Life and the Struggle for Racial Justice.
Everyone in the world knows how George Floyd died, but our book is about how George Floyd lives, and it talks about his persistence while navigating structures around the country that were laced with systemic racism.
We wanted to write this book in part because we wanted to show how George Floyd had experienced institutional racism over the course of his life, long before he met the state force represented by Derek Chauvin and the Minneapolis Police Department.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden's vowed to defend Taiwan if it's attacked by China. He made the remark when questioned during a news conference in Tokyo earlier today.
You didn't want to get involved in the Ukraine conflict militarily for obvious reasons. Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that?
Yes.
You are?
That's a commitment we made. That's a commitment we made. We are not. Look, here's the situation. We agree with a one China policy. We've signed on to it and all the attendant agreements made from there. But the idea that it can be taken by force, just taken by force, is just not appropriate. It will dislocate the entire region and be another action similar to what happened in Ukraine.
After Biden spoke, White House officials tried to walk back his comments, which mark a shift from longtime U.S. policy on Taiwan known as strategic ambiguity. During his trip to Asia, Biden also unveiled a new trade initiative with 12 Indo-Pacific countries as part of an effort to counter China's growing power in the region. On Sunday, hundreds of demonstrators gathered in Tokyo to protest Biden's visit.
Their actions are extremely dangerous now. Japan and the U.S. are trying to conduct a war of aggression on China.
While in Japan, Biden is meeting leaders from the other members of the so-called Quad, Australia, India, and Japan. Australia will be represented by its new Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, who was just sworn in today. Albanese's center-left Labour Party won the most seats in Saturday's election, toppling the right-wing, pro-coal Scott Morrison, who'd served as Australia's Prime Minister since 2018 and ending a decade of Conservative rule. Anthony Albanese addressed supporters after his election.
Together, we can end the climate wars. Together, we can take advantage of the opportunity for Australia to be a renewable energy superpower.
The Australian election has been described as a green slide, with voters strongly backing candidates pushing for stronger climate action. We'll have more on Australia after headlines with leading Australian climate activist and scientist Tim Flannery. President Biden signed a $40 billion